This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Now we've been joined by expected guest.
Yeah, looking a bit frazzled.
It's quite early, isn't it?
Well, for some.
It is for me.
We're nearly at the end of the show, but for some.
Yeah, look, it's great that you could come along and join us.
Pleasure.
I first saw you at Manchester Pride last year.
Yeah.
And that was my first introduction to Jen Brister, and I thought, this is one funny lady.
That was an odd gig, wasn't it? It was like broad daylight. And just, because when I arrived, I was like, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
This is not going to work at all. But it's fine. It was good fun. I really enjoyed it.
But Jen was just telling us about the trip you had to coming to Australia, which was really unfunny.
Oh, 36 hours to get to Adelaide.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You spent some time in Adelaide.
I spent a month there. Yeah, doing the Fringe. I loved it. Everybody's so down on Adelaide here. They're like, Adelaide's so boring, blah, blah, blah.
It's pretty.
It's very pretty, and during the Fringe, it was great. Great for good food, lovely wine.
We just played a song called Adelaide, and Jenny Biddle, the artist, wrote a song about it. She says it's beautiful.
Well, she says it's all right, can't be bad, can it?
Correct.
Right, that's true.
You know?
So I wrote to you and ended up inviting you to the show ages ago.
I know, and I wasn't even supposed to be coming to Melbourne at that point. So it's all worked. It's all been very serendipitous, hasn't it? It's worked out very well.
It has. And you're of course here in Melbourne for the International Comedy Festival.
I am. Yes, I'm doing a show. My show's called British-ish.
Yes. Now, it's an interesting show actually, because I sat there listening to it in the front row. I got to move into the front row, and I was listening to it, and I thought, you know, this is all the stereotypical Brits that you're talking about.
Mm.
And I thought, this is going to go down fabulously well in Australia, because we really hate the Brits at the moment, to realise that.
Why is that?
They won the Ashes.
Oh, yeah, we won the Ashes, that's it. Yeah. There's stuff in there that's I guess is a stereotype, but it's all like all the stories are truthful,
and
I think that the way it's looking at behaviours, and I mean I like a lot of the stuff that I do is actually universal. It could be about anybody, any sort of Western country really, but I choose it to be about Britain. I mean the stuff about going away and going travelling and things like that could be anybody, but I there's lots of stuff in there that's kind of universal, but there are a lot of things that are very true about the Brits, and I do, I have done it in front of British audiences, and they're like, yeah, that's pretty accurate, that's pretty right, So yeah, there are some stereotypes there, but I think those stereotypes exist, unfortunately. So, and I feel quite happy to make fun of them.
Well, I just thought it was serendipitous in another sense, because Horse ended up coming over at the same time as Jen came over, and a whole heap of other British comedians.
Yeah, yeah. It's all we've all sort of landed at the same time.
Yeah.
Do you see them around town? Do you know them? Do you sort of
what the other Poms?
Yep.
Yeah, because I know them from home. Yeah. I know them from the circuit.
So you catch up with them here and
yeah. I mean it's difficult. We're all living in different places. We're all doing different shows in different venues, and so
actually, I did a 5 a.m. interview with the BBC on Tuesday morning.
Oh, that sounds horrific.
Anita can't say no.
No, clearly.
It was pretty exhausting. But I spent the whole time talking about, you know, the imports, if you like, that were here for the comedy festival, and the fact that Horse was doing the gig down here and everything. And I said, we're being invaded by the British here.
Oh, you're doing a pretty good job back home. Don't worry about it.
That's okay.
Yeah, so it's quite even.
And they finished off playing a couple of Kylie Minogue tracks.
Just for your benefit.
Yeah.
Anyway. So how do you go? Do you actually compete for the same sort of audience, or are there enough people to go around in Melbourne to catch the amount of comedy that we've got?
Well, I suppose we're all in a little competition, aren't we, with each other to get people to come and see our shows. I mean, you'll see that outside the town hall where we're all sort of with our flyers begging people to come and see us. But, you know, everybody's got something different to offer. I mean, I, you know, people will appeal to different people for different reasons. I mean, I'm not certainly going to appeal to everybody, and neither will, you know, any other comic. But I mean, I think if people want to take a risk and not go and see Arj Barker just exclusively, go and see somebody else. There's so many different comedians to go and take a risk, and I think it's definitely do that, because it's a comedy festival, for heaven's sake.
Yeah. Do you get a chance to catch anyone else?
I'm trying to, but I find it difficult to watch anything before me, because I can't really relax. And then after me, I tend to do other gigs after my gig, which means that I don't always. I have seen some stuff. So I saw Dr. Brown. He's at my venue as well. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. Zoe Lyons, go and see her. She's on at the Town Hall at the Powder Room. She's absolutely fantastic. My mind's gone blank now.
It's okay.
It is early, as you said.
It is for me.
Because it's worth going along to... what is it? comedyfestival.com.au and find out just all the treats that are in town for people.
Absolutely. Do it.
Do it, do it, do it,
do it. And don't just go and see what's on at the Tower Hall. There's loads of venues.
Yeah, and some of them are real quirky, aren't they?
Yeah, certainly my one is. Yeah. It's like a bunker. Do you like that? Do you like going down that corridor, Anita?
I thought I was going down to the cellars or somewhere.
Yeah. Did you see the gas taps at the top? Slightly worrying.
But they were very pleased to have collared you for the whole season.
Yeah, because I had so much fun with them in Adelaide, and their venue in Adelaide was absolutely amazing. It was like this old insurance building, which they'd literally had been disused for many years, and they just went in there and they'd made an appeal to the mayor there and said, "Can we use it as a venue?" And he said, "Yeah, you've got 18 months." Oh. And so they gutted it and just turned it around into this fantastic venue, which I believe is going to stay like that for the next sort of 6 months or a year.
Yep.
So yeah, I had a great time there, and it's been great to work with the same people in Melbourne and have that continuity, because it's like a little family there at Tuxedo Cat, so it's lovely.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got to take a few announcements and maybe a song, and then we'll come back and finish up.
Okay. Okay, I'll let you do that.
Thank you.
Hi, we're the Top Twins, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
We're back here with Jen Brister, who's in town, and we've collared her to tell us a little bit about what it's like being a comedian.
It's very glamorous, Anita, as you can well imagine, standing in various different smoky venues. Well, not smoky anymore, are they? With drunk people leering. It's great. Everywhere, I recommend it.
Sounds like a winner,
mate. It's an absolute dream. It is now. I'm here. I'm in Australia. It's brilliant. This is the best thing that's happened to me in my career. Is normally I'm just travelling around the UK, so the opportunity to come to Australia has been a lot more glamorous, actually.
So you weren't a comedian when you lived in Melbourne before?
No, I was just bumming around, really. Just bumming around. I was in my 20s.
Yeah,
I was in my 20s, just kind of exploring Australia And I really had such a good time. I was like, I'm going to live here. And then I was trying to find ways of how to live here. And they were like, well, can you do this? Can you hairdresser? Can you a doctor? Are you a nurse? You a teacher? And I was like, no. They're like, no, you can't come in. Then when I went back home, that's when I did actually do a couple of gigs here when I was here. Bearing in mind, I was pretty dreadful. At the ESPY.
St Kilda?
Yeah, the ESPY in St Kilda. I did a couple of gigs there. I was probably awful, because this is a long time ago, but I wasn't working as a comedian. That took a long time for me to get to the point where someone would pay me.
How did you get into that?
I did a drama degree, and in that drama degree we did a comedy course, believe it or not, and in that comedy course it required me to go and do 5 minutes of stand-up in a quite a well-known venue in London called the King's Head, where they've been doing, it's like the oldest comedy venue in the country, I think. Well, certainly in London. And I kind of got the bug for it there. And also, I suppose a lot of comics, I think, will agree with this. We're all a bit, we're kind of sentiment of control freakery going on in what we do. And I'd thought about doing acting and that sort of thing, but it required so much, like, you know, you have to rely on so many other people. You've got to audition, then you've got to get on with the director, and then other people, they might not be very good, and they have to work with them. That sounds horrible. So stand-up, I got to write my own material. Book my own gigs. I got to stand up on stage on my own and do it. And so once I'd started doing that, I thought, well, I'll just do that. It's perfect. And then eventually somebody said, oh, we'll pay you. And I went, ah! Brilliant. Yeah, this is really amazing. Okay, I'll keep doing it then. Because for a while, I think I was just not sure why I was doing it. But once I'd committed to it, it all sort of snowballed. And it's been a dream ever since.
Now, when did you start introducing your mum into your storylines?
About 5 years ago.
Right.
About 5-6 years ago, actually. Yeah, my mum started appearing in my storylines, and mainly because I wrote a whole hour of material about my mum, actually. Just because every time she opened her mouth, I went, please, right, I'll just write that down. That's absolute genius. What did you say? Okay, keep talking. And that hour wrote itself. And it was really... I wrote this show because my mum and I'm very close to my mum, but we have this incredibly fractious relationship where we argue a lot. And I was trying to explore that and why, because a lot of my friends are like, oh, my mum is my best friend and we get on so well. And I was like, God, that is weird. How is that possible that you can be best friends with your mum? So I wrote this song, I wrote this show called Me, My Mum and I, and it was based on my relationship. And so all of this. And then once I'd started doing that, it just became quite easy to kind of explore other
things. Can you share the one that you were talking about before about your birthday?
Oh, right, yeah. Well, just before I came out here, it was my birthday, and my mum forgot my birthday. So I phoned my mum up, and I said, Mum, what day is it today? She went, I don't know. I said, well, it's my birthday. You forgot my birthday. She said, oh, well, Yennefer, it happened a long time ago, so, you know. And I was like, great, Mum, it's every year. Yeah, okay, so there's no reason to forget it. And she went, Yennefer, I don't know if you know this, but I was very busy at the time, so.
You do the accent so well, too.
I know, it probably doesn't really sound, it's just a generic Spanish accent. My mum, when she, because I let her, she didn't come to see my show, the hour show that I did. But she said, oh, let me read. She said, will you script it for me so I can read it? And I said, yeah, of course, because I wanted to run everything past her.
Yeah.
She said it's funny, that's good. I don't mind any of that, it's okay. Because I always came off worse in all of the jokes. Yeah. So she was fine about it.
Is she the only person that calls you Yennefer?
Yennefer, yeah, she's the only person that calls me that. I always know I'm in trouble if anyone calls me Jennifer. I'm like, what have I done?
Yeah.
But if it's Yennefer, then I know I'm absolutely, that's it, I'm done for.
Would you ever appear with your mum on stage?
No, it's not fair. Yeah. No, my mum has absolutely no interest in having any attention at all.
Yeah.
She would hate it. She'd absolutely hate it.
Are you disappointed she hasn't been to your show though?
She's seen me do stand-up many times.
Oh, okay, but not...
But she hasn't seen me do an hour. I mean, I'd invite her to... I'd love her to see this show, Britishish. I think she'd really like it. But I think there are bits of it that she'd probably be very embarrassed. I think you know the bits, Anita.
Yeah. I know the bits where you talk about, your mother's Spanish heritage. But I don't know that would embarrass her.
No, but there are a couple of bits in there which might embarrass her a bit. But not the bits that are necessarily about her.
Oh, right. Yes, I know. Yes, yeah. I do know. And you have to go along to the show, folks, to find out about those.
Yeah, exactly.
So how long are you in town?
I'm here until the end of the festival, which is the 24th. So, it's another 2 weeks, isn't it? Two weeks to go.
To remind the listener, they can get the information at comedyfestival.com.au.
Yeah, but stick around. We've got to take some more announcements. And play a track and then we'll come back.
Okay, cool.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
We're still with Jen Brister here in the Joy Studios. And she's sitting there like...
How comfortable I look. I look very relaxed, don't I?
You do, You should be I'm at home your now. Own radio show.
I know. I used to do radio, believe it or not, on the BBC. Oh, right. And then that ended, so that was good. I think, do you know what's happened? This has kicked in. The coffee's just kicked in. Yes.
It's gone bang.
It's gone bang. I'm there. I'm completely with it now.
Okay, that's great to know because we've only got, like, another quarter of an hour, maybe.
So
we better fill it up with some
stuff.
Some stuff.
Funny stories.
Some funny
maybe.
Stuff, yeah.
Where do you hope to go after, not just Melbourne, but sort of in the future?
Oh, Hollywood. Yeah, probably take over the world, actually.
Absolutely.
Immediately, I'm going to go home and then I am going to get myself ready for Edinburgh Festival and probably go look at this show that I've got and Because, you know, whatever I've got, I've adapted it for an Australian audience, and I need to go home and then adapt it again for a British audience and do some rewrites and that, and previews and all that sort of thing. So that's going to be, in terms of my live work, I'm still going to be focusing on that show, on this show, as well as gigs. And then other than that, I've got some lots of ideas about stuff that we'll be filming and whatnot for YouTube. I don't know why I keep saying whatnot.
Well, whatnot's a good word.
I've picked that up since I got to Australia, and I've never heard anyone in Australia say whatnot. I don't know why whatnot has appeared in my vocabulary. I must lose it. I'm gonna be doing bits and bobs of filming for an idea I've got, which I'd like to put onto YouTube and see what people think about it. So that's immediately. I'm gonna be very busy when I get back. Hopefully.
Yes. So for an hour of stand up, about how much time behind the scenes of writing?
A lot.
Do you have to do? Yeah.
A lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of writing.
I think people don't understand that, do they? I think you sort of think that you grab a few stories and whack it together and jump up on stage and be funny.
They do, but it's very, you know, it's a work in progress. Every time you get up on stage and you do an hour, it's a work in progress. And I think if you speak to any comic, they'll say, you know, you'll go with an idea and then you'll try it out and then you'll be like, okay, well, that worked. See if it works again. And then you have to try to use as few words as possible to get to the joke, and then you have to, it's the rhythm of the story and how it fits in with all the other stories you've got. And
with comedy, timing is everything, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. It absolutely is. I mean, especially with in what I do. I mean, my comedy is very story-focused. So if the rhythm of what I'm saying isn't really bang on, then people are going to not go with it. And also, then it affects how the punchline will work. And there's a lot to be thinking about on stage. And also, I find that my comedy is very energy driven, and so if people don't connect with me, that can also, or if I feel disconnected, then the audience will feel disconnected. And so,
and when they do connect with you, they have their own comments to make as you go through your little bits, and maybe you can weave in something on that, the response to that.
You have to. I mean, stand-up comedy is about being in the moment, so you always have to be, so whatever you're saying, it has to be like you're saying it for the first time. You're in that moment. And so then if you are completely in that moment, then if somebody shouts out something to you, it's okay, because you're in that moment, and so you can respond to them.
Yeah.
But if you're just reeling stuff off because you're bored of it, then all of a sudden, if somebody starts shouting something at you, you're gonna be like, oh, hang on a second, I'm not really focused. And comedy, you've got to be, you can never be on the back foot. You've got to be right on it. You've got to be right on the money, because otherwise terrible things can happen to you on stage. Definitely.
Have you ever done a real
Of course.
Flop?
Of course. Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely. There's not a comedian in the world that hasn't gone on stage and died a horrible death.
I'm a glass half full person. I'd say, have you ever done a real, what's your best show? Like
horror.
The best show. You never remember the best shows. Once you've done a great show, you're like, oh, good, that's done. On to the next one.
Wow.
You're only as good as the last show that you've done. So it doesn't matter. I could have had an absolute stormer. Last night, and then whatever, and then tonight, different show.
Yeah,
so different, I will only respond to what happens tonight. If you see what I mean. So, you always remember your terrible gigs. It's very, very strange. I mean, I've done loads of gigs, hundreds and hundreds, probably more than that, thousands of gigs. But ultimately, the only gigs I will remember are the ones where stood on stage and just felt every single part of my energy just disappear out of my feet. Yeah, that's the...
So what makes a good audience for you?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not what necessarily a response to your comedy. Your comedy might be brilliant, but the audience that you've got for that particular gig is just not with it somehow.
There is. I mean, there are certain times where I've not even been able to explain what's happened.
All right.
And of course, instinctively, I'll go, oh, it's the audience's fault. They don't understand me as an artist. But ultimately, it might well be me. I might have gone on stage and just been rubbish. But by the time you know that you're being, and it's self-fulfilling anyway. Once the audience have decided that they're not into what you're doing, there's very, very little you can do sometimes to get them back. And so I find best thing to do is just get off. Yeah. Just get off as quickly as you can. Because there's a little part of you as a comedian where you go, I'm going to stay on until you laugh.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I'm going to make you laugh. You didn't like that bit, don't worry. This bit you're going to love. But ultimately, they can get to a point where you're like, there's nothing no I use. Can do. Get off. So those times are, hopefully, if you're doing this as a professional, are very few and far between, and so it doesn't happen very often.
We're going to have to take another break shortly, but when we come back, I'd like to talk to you about pub gigs.
Sure, I've done hundreds.
I've done a few of them, and I'll try and remember to turn all the mics off this time.
I think people liked my narrative over the jazz, actually.
Hi, I'm Claire Mooney. You're listening to Women on Waves with Anita on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Unfortunately, that's just about time for us to wrap up the show, but I'm not going to be able to ask you the question. Maybe if you've got a quick answer to what it's like performing in pubs.
It's amazing. No, it can be, depends on the pub, you know. But yeah. I mean, pub crowds, sometimes the best gigs you'll ever have.
Do they actually listen when they're sort of drinking and carrying on?
Well, I tell you, one of the weirdest gigs I did was just a microphone in a pub. Because normally if you do a pub gig, they do give you a separate room, so you get a nice, right. You might get an audience. But I have done gigs where just a microphone in the room and a load of old men staring at me.
Not nice.
I had to do 40 minutes, so that was...
long.
Horrific.
Yes, I can imagine.
But yes, in those instances it does. It can be difficult. It can be very difficult to get them to listen.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Jen, for coming along.
Absolute pleasure.
Chewing the fat with us.
I've very much enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.